PBO officials, officials from Parliament, which is the support service for this committee. If we have got guests who are in attendance, you are welcome. If Treasury is in attendance, they are also welcome. Let me also welcome my colleagues, Honorable Dikelet Mahlangu, Honorable Eunice Karim, Honorable Buthelezi won't be in attendance, and members of National Assembly and members of the NCOP, you are all welcome. And the meeting is officially open. There, apologies.
Yes, Chairperson, good morning. From the Select Committee side, Mr. Njadu will be arriving late. That's the only apology we have.
Okay. Are there other apologies? Alan Tebuko, do we have apologies from the lower house?
Chair, Standing Committee on Finance, no apologies.
Okay, no apologies. Is Honorable Dikelet Mahlangu connected, and Honorable Eunice Karim, are they all connected?
Yes, they are both connected, Chair. On the Select Committee, we have Mahlangu, Mr. Moletsan, Mr. Tutoit, Mr. Ryder, Mr. Okam, Mr. Karim, and Ms. Mamarekhane.
Okay. Colleagues, Honorable Karim and Honorable Mahlangu, are there comments that you would want to make before we proceed to get a presentation from PBO? Over to you.
Not from me, Chairperson. Thank you.
No, thanks.
Okay. You are welcome. Colleagues, thanks very much. Let me right away move towards the briefing by the PBO. Dr. Jankis, you are welcome, and we have already congratulated you on your appointment as the director of the PBO. We are looking forward to work with you in your term of office. The capable team. Over to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Wait a bit, Dr. Jankis. Oh, okay. There was a phone which was ringing in the background. It's off now.
Sorry, it was my phone. Sorry about that, Chair. I just took it off now. It's my phone. Good morning, honor members. Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you so much for congratulations, and thank you so much for welcoming us. And thank you so much for the opportunity for Parliament at the Budget Office to provide this briefing to the committee. And with my colleagues, we've done this presentation with the report submitted last week, so we've been hoping to have workshop catalyze engagement with members. I think the brief enables the members of both committees in both houses to identify the focus areas. Oh, I think, sorry, I think Dr. Mohammed is moving to the slides, but I'm sorry, just move quickly there. There's an outline of our presentation. We have those key areas that we're going to cover. So you need to have a presentation that we're going to do. And I will just do the introduction part and make sure there are some colleagues coming, and I'll also come in at the end with some of the key issues that we basically committees to take into account setting up for tomorrow. Next slide, sir. I mean, the brief enables members of Parliament to identify focus areas in relation to the budget to be presented tomorrow. And the brief provides an update on some social status, macroeconomic conditions and fiscal context that the budget will be presented tomorrow. But also we provide some status on the details on some of the presentation of 2020 budget as it's revised in October. But also We further provided an overview of some of the service delivery situations in various levels of government. In a way, we want to emphasize the importance of prudence in budgeting and resource allocations in the context of providing social relief given COVID-19 effect on the site, stimulating economic growth and the need to economic recovery and product development as expected. It is within this context, Chair and other members, that emphasize that it is important that the budget does not become an annual event. It is a long-term process and it has to be seen in that context. And South Africans have seen the changes that are brought about by the budget in economy and society. And we have seen that even before the COVID-19, South African society and economy already had challenges, and the COVID-19 and related lockdown effects have exacerbated some of these challenges. Poverty has increased, seen hunger increased as well. There have been issues around, you know, provision of education and so on. Therefore, the government budget remains an important thing in resolving some of these challenges and setting out the environment for longer-term growth and development. South African economy remains concentrated, expansionary, and untransformed. And therefore, budget has to play an important role in enabling the equity, fairer and equitable society in this regard. Government make announcements for social economic relief to mitigate some of the effects of the COVID-19 in society and the economy. And this relief provides much needed support into households, small, medium, and micro enterprises, some of the challenges around informal business in this process. However, there are promising signs on global and also at the domestic level of recovery, and therefore opportunities exist for government to use the budget to build up on some of these signs in providing economic growth in the country. So that's where we're hoping this pre-budget will set out the context of the engagement. And we circulated this presentation last week Friday, and the report will give members some time to go through and arrange some key areas. We normally take this opportunity as a pre-bridge to have like a workshop where we build on some of the discussions. And I think what we also wanted to suggest is, since our presentation is a bit long today, if it's possible to break in the middle and maybe have some more engagement with members and continue to make sure that you cover all the ground. I think that's okay with you, Chairperson. I will now hand over to Dr. Olandi, Dr. Mohamed, Dr. Sukatani, Mr. Amra, Ms. Banda, and Mr. Semela to take us through this to the whole presentation. And I'll come in later to summarize some of the issues. Thank you so much. Thank you. Dr. Sukatani? Before Dr. Sukatani comes in, Chair, I just want to check if it's possible to break the presentation within the middle and allow some engagement with the honored members and, you know, continue, or do you want us to take it throughout?
If you can present without breaks, remember also this afternoon we have got a sitting of the National Assembly. I'm not sure with the NCOP, so we don't have much time.
Okay.
And I'll request that in their presentations, they don't have to take too long on the narratives. If they have, if it's possible, let them speak to the slide. We have sent us the presentations in advance. We have gone through them. So I will request that instead of going through each and every point in the slide, let them speak to the slide, move to the next slide, so that within the limited time that we have, we are able to deal with the key issues. So that will be my request.
Thank you, Chairman. Dr. Sadan.
Thank you, Dr. Janjus. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. The outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020 found a vulnerable South African economy. In fact, at the time the pandemic reached our shores, the South African economy had experienced two consecutive quarters of a recession. So as a result, COVID-19 pandemic deepened the economic crisis in the country. We saw many people lose their jobs. Many have gone without income for extended periods, and many are going hungry every day. So to contain the spread of the virus, the government had to take had to take extraordinary measures to support ordinary South Africans and businesses in distress to protect people's livelihood. So in April last year, we saw the government introducing the social and economic relief package in order to relieve people from the and businesses from the distress they were going through due to the pandemic. So the government says the economic and the social relief package is the largest intervention of its kind in the history of the country. It identified measures worth a total of 500 billion, which we saw relieving some poorest households and providing wage support to workers and to businesses who were struggling. We saw about 18 million people receiving additional grants. We saw about 4.5 million workers benefiting through this grant, and we saw SMEs receiving about 1.3 billion through the support of this grant. Next slide. And also in April, Chairperson, we saw the President introducing, in October 2020, introducing the or presenting the Economic and Reconstruction and Recovery Plan in Parliament. The plan is aimed at stimulating equitable and inclusive growth. Progress has since been made in the implementation of the first four priorities of the plan. The first one is the massive rollout of infrastructure throughout the country. Progress has been made in the development of an infrastructure investment project pipeline worth 350 billion in network industries. Progress has been made on several major water infrastructure projects. Resources have been committed from the fiscus to support the construction and rehabilitation of the N1, N2 and N3 highways. The 100 billion infrastructure fund is now set to be in full operation. And the second priority is the massive increase in total in local production. So all social partners who participated in the development of the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan agreed to work together to reduce reliance on imports by 20% over the next 5 years. And Cabinet also approved the SME-focused localization policy framework, which identified 1,000 local products. So through the implementation of the various master plans that were recently signed, for example, the poultry master plan, the sugar master plan, and the clothing, textile, footwear, and leather master plan, local production has been increased in this regard, and we saw this creating some job opportunities which are highly needed in the country. Next slide. And the third priority is the employment stimulus to create jobs and support livelihoods. In the 2020 SONA, the President announced that the National Youth Development Agency and the Department of Small Business Development will provide grant funding and business support to 1,000 young entrepreneurs within 100 days. But due to the COVID-19 restriction, the program had to be put on hold. But nonetheless, the program managed to reach its target by the International Youth Day, which was in August the 12th last year. And they also, the presidential employment stimulus supported about 430,000 opportunities by the end of January 2020. The fourth priority is the rapid expansion of energy generation capacity. In December 2020, the government and its social partners signed the historic ESCOM Social Compact, which outlines the necessary actions to be taken collectively and as individual constituencies to meet the country's energy needs. So over the 2020 actions, over the year 2020, actions were taken to urgently and substantially increase the generation capacity in addition to what ESCOM generates. Initiatives and actions are underway in this regard in order to create additional energy on top of what ESCOM is providing. So this is the report that was given by the President in terms of the progress that is happening in terms of the implementation of the Economic Reconstruction and the Recovery Plan. I'll hand over to Dr. Olandi to indicate more of the progress that is happening in terms of this implementation of the ERRP. Thank you.
Thank you, Mapula. Good morning, honourable members. My colleague just gave feedback on some of the 2020 priorities, which included special steps that had to be taken due to the COVID-19 virus, the interventions plan to recover the economy, and projects to improve service delivery on a local level. The next few slides aim to provide you with more detail on some of the outputs produced by individual departments, starting with health. So members, better health outcomes and impact of health services can be achieved only by improving coverage and quality of care, which will require system-wide action. Reliable clinical care must be aligned to norms and standards and a system that is positively received by patients. A current report showed that 31% of complaints are in terms of waiting times, 29% on patient care, and 26% in terms of staff attitude. The National Department of Health leads and coordinates health, with funding amounting to almost 6% of the total allocations per vote. On average, the department transfers 93% of the allocation, allocated amounts to other institutions, of which almost 89% is transferred to provinces in the form of conditional grants. Just to give you feedback on an analysis of the audited performance of the conditional grants in 2019, the National Tertiary Grant underspent due to delays in delivery of equipment, but all performance outputs have been exceeded, although they've underspent. In terms of the HIV, TB and malaria and community outreach grant, they underspent by only 0.8%, and but they also underperformed in terms of the TB, HIV and malaria targets. The risk with regards to this kind of performance is that underperformance is that the grant now also manages the COVID-19 funds. It's been allocated within in the management system of this grant. And in this year, Health also transferred the papillomavirus funding to the management within this grant. The Health Facility Revitalization Grant underspent by 3% of the transferred amount, which is a relative small percentage, but only 3 of 5 planned new facilities were basically completed. In terms of the National Health Insurance Grant, the health facility component, that underspent by 22% on the original budget, and only 2 of the 6 planned facilities were completed. 39 of 45 planned facilities were maintained, and 2 of the planned 10 facilities were basically upgraded or renovated. The Health Professional Training and Development Grant, almost the full transferred amount for the conditional grant was spent, but there was slow recruitment of specialists and other staff members. What I also noted when I did the evaluation is that this grant is relatively small in terms of the other grants, but they plan to employ 23 staff members just to do the administration of this grant. So full expenditure without performance raises the question about the credibility of the budget and whether there was efficient expenditure of funds. The human papillomavirus, there was underspending of 19% on the original budget, but that's almost performed on the 80% target of vaccinating 9-year-olds. The National Health Insurance Grant, with the personal services component, the department has spent only 13% of this budget. No district-level observations for psychiatric services, clinical psychological services, and forensic mental services were provided. There was no spending on general practitioner contracting due to non-compliance of health professionals to the supply chain management requirements. And although the capitation model was developed, it was not implemented due to capacity challenges to implement the reimbursement model. In terms of the National Health Insurance non-personal services component, the department has only spent 64% of the original budget, and the department performed or overperformed on basically all their planned outputs in terms of this funding. The next few slides aim to provide you with more detail on some of the outputs produced by individual departments responsible to take immediate steps that will have an impact on the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. The first 5 priority areas are to ensure energy, although the Department of Mineral Resources plan to develop several frameworks, plans and legislation, the development of an integrated energy plan and others has been postponed due to the lack of resources. They don't have the software or the human resources. Another reason for not achieving some of the other planned outputs are delays in procurement of service providers for their tasks. A draft National Energy Regulation Bill has, however, been submitted to the state law advisor. Next slide. In terms of the industrialization, the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition is the lead department for this intervention, and although the department produced several analysis reports, indications are that several of the planned outputs were basically discontinued. Next slide. In terms of the infrastructure performance to meet the NDP targets, it's mainly led by the Department of Transport, Communication and Digital Technologies and Water and Sanitation. The outputs reflected in the APPs, which are reported on in the quarterly performance reports, involves the development of several reports and frameworks, such as the National Household Travel Survey, an initial draft, the High Speed Rail Corridor Framework, an analysis report on the Plaza Modernization Program, etc. I'm not going to go through all of them. The Department of Communication and Digital Technologies is responsible for an intervention to implement digital migration, and they committed to subsidize 4.7 million in indigent households in the first phase of the implementation of the Economic Recovery Plan, but no numbers were reported on the quarterly performance report on this output, so I cannot provide you with feedback on the progress made. And this was also immediate intervention. The Department of Water and Sanitation is responsible for bulk water infrastructure, which they indicated that are not fully funded. The completion of construction tender evaluations for bulk raw water projects were not ready for implementation by the end of the second quarter as planned, and therefore the construction contracts will also not be awarded by the third quarter as planned. Next, immediate macroeconomic interventions and enablers for economic growth are led by several departments, of which the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development is part of that sector. They achieved most of the targets for conviction rates by the second quarter of 2020-21 in terms of the quarterly performance report, but there were delays experienced in high-value cases. Justice recovered 2.6 million. And 500,000 worth of freezing orders were obtained for corruption or offences related to corruption. The Department of Employment and Labour continues to protect workers through the UIS, and in addition, they also registered 405,523 workers, work seekers on the Employment Services of South African database against the target of 187,500. 43,881 employment opportunities, of which 18,971 employment opportunities were actually filled by registered work seekers that was on that database. The Department of Human Settlements committed to interventions in the form of gap housing products. The quarterly performance report mainly reflects progress on research, monitoring and evaluation reports, and outputs in terms of gap housing could not be detected in the quarterly performance report. To date, the Department of Small Business Development dispersed 316 million of the 513 million budget and supported the maintenance of 23,254 jobs in the economy. But most of the financial support to SMMEs, informal businesses and cooperatives was diverted or reprioritized to newly developed COVID-19 relief programs. Next slide. In terms of agriculture, outputs by the Department of Agriculture has been affected by the lockdown and the loss of technical advisors. In addition to the lockdown restrictions, so most of the targets for rural development, land redistribution and capital projects were not achieved or moved to the remainder of the financial year. To revise the tourism sector, the department does not report directly on the number of domestic and international holiday trips, but are in the process of developing a concept document for the development of a national tourism analytics system framework. other indicators that could be useful to monitor the progress for the revival of the tourism sector is that the department ensures the maintenance of infrastructure in sandparks, and they finalise the terms of records for the appointment of a service provider to develop project concepts for 5 community-based tourism projects. Next slide. Also, members, to give feedback in terms of interventions to improve local government service delivery, the district development model was rolled out in 3 pilot sites, and further rollout was planned to 44 sites in 2020. So despite of different understandings of government role players regarding the intent of the model, a monitoring and evaluation report by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation actually indicated that communities who have suffered special disadvantage have been exposed to vulnerabilities of the current disaster, in specific to access to water, shelter, economic activity, spatial mapping of the COVID-19 outbreaks, health interventions and health system readiness. Members, this brings me to the end of the progress report. The next 2 slides provide the strategic direction for future funding priorities. So the first priority is to defeat the coronavirus pandemic. Secondly is to implement the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, of which we basically provided you with preliminary progress on. And lastly, the next slide is government needs to fight corruption and strengthen the state. We need cooperation and sharing of resources between the respective law enforcement agencies, enabling a more integrated approach to investigations and prosecutions. We also need to implement the national anti-corruption strategy. Thank you, members. Siraj.
Okay, I was just unmuting myself. Thank you very much, Nelia. So, honourable members, the previous section, as Nelia pointed out, was to give an overview of government's priorities, our responses to COVID-19 and ongoing efforts to improve socioeconomic outcomes and reconstruction recovery, and as far as was possible, given the data and often not having data, or getting available data that's not supported by government departments, trying to give progress as far as possible. This next section that I'm dealing with, and my colleagues Patsani Banda and Rashad Amra will also continue, is looking at the economic context for the development of the budget. And here what we do is we keep up to date and we follow a whole lot of literature and ongoing reports and re-estimations of progress in terms of global GDP and other economic variables, and we sort of try and put this into a very short section. We also try and show what emphasis are placed by, especially in the international agencies, and the advice they're giving to countries on an ongoing basis. Okay, I was struggling to change the slide. In terms of the global economic outlook, we put up this graph, which comes from the World Economic Outlook report of the World Bank for late January 2021. So these are the like statistics, and it's very similar to what we're seeing coming out of the IMF and the United Nations organizations. The world economy is estimated to have contracted by 4.3% in 2020, and that's an estimate so far. They haven't got the full year 2020 figures yet. The world economy is forecast to grow by 4% in 2021, but there's much uncertainty and risk associated with the COVID-19 pandemic, and we'll come to that in the next slide. And then looking at, within this graph, we put South Africa, the world, emerging, developing, and developing countries and advanced economies. And just to compare South Africa to the world, the South African economy has performed below the averages for the world economy. We're seeing this not only for 2020 and the impact of COVID, but you see it in the pre-COVID 2018-2019. And as we look forward at the forecast, It's also not going to perform as well as the global economy. The poor performance is forecast to continue through to 2022. So while government has attempted to address the economic impact of the pandemic, global macroeconomic experience is that more stimulus is needed to support the large impact of the pandemic on South Africa's GDP growth. Projected global economic growth is positive for 2021, but several risks indicate the need for continued fiscal action. Uncertainty remains due to the impact of the current and future waves of the pandemic, successful rollout vaccines and new strains of COVID-19. And we're seeing around the world, the logistics and the supplies of the vaccine, sometimes resistance to being vaccinated, are all factors that affect vaccination, but also the time frames are uncertain. In some countries, it may be quicker. We're actually seeing in the US and Europe sometimes delays caused by weather and other things. And so everybody's predicting that there will be new waves. And in South Africa, it's being predicted that by May, June, we will have our third wave. And the severity of that third wave is going to be dependent on whether the new strain, but there's also uncertainty about that and what that will then mean in terms of economic impact. The uneven global rollout of the vaccine increases inequality across countries and within countries, and the possibility of increased social and political instability. And we've seen quite recently in the US, but in many other countries, this growth in political instability and recognition that has to be dealt with, and that there are socioeconomic roots to these. Large-scale fiscal stimuli helped ease suffering, but are generally unlikely to have supported longer-term investments and creation of new jobs. Therefore, the global economy may face a lower growth phase unless there's continued support for household incomes, jobs, and investments. And we're seeing, for instance, that President Biden is trying to put together a really huge package in the U.S. because of this kind of recognition that there's a real concern that if not enough is done, then there's going to be a lower growth phase. So basically looking at the pre-COVID growth on one level, and then the impact of COVID putting the global economy, but also domestic economies at risk of being in lower growth phases and meaning lower levels of jobs and investments and other economic activity. There's also risk of financial market stress, and crises have increased. So the risks of crisis have also increased. Many developing countries have had to increase debt, and unless there's debt relief and forgiveness, the likelihood of debt crisis is high. The other aspect of the risk is that within developed countries, there's been a huge increase in financial liquidity, especially from central banks, that has led to underpricing of risk and bubbles in financial markets. So I can go into that in more detail if members have questions. In terms of the global economic outlook, and this is again looking at the documents being put out by the several international agencies, there's a broad consensus amongst international agencies about the need for continued support to address the impact of the pandemic. The United Nations 2021 World Economic Situations and Prospects warns that the rise public debt should not in itself be a concern as long as additional debt expands productive capacity and stimulates growth. A premature embrace of austerity will inevitably weaken the speed and quality of the recovery and undermine resilience for future shocks. This is, I think, something we should keep in mind as we read the budget when it comes out. And according to the World Bank 2021 World Economic Outlook, key immediate policy priorities are limiting the spread of the virus, providing relief for vulnerable populations, and overcoming vaccine-related challenges. They also say as the crisis abates, policymakers need to balance the risks from large and growing debt loads with those from slowing the economy through premature fiscal tightening. Ms. Banda will continue. Thank you.
Thanks, Taraj, for giving us the global outlook. I will go into the specificities of the economic performance of South Africa. As my previous colleagues have mentioned, the pandemic has been the highlight of economic performance of South African economy. In particular, in the second quarter of 2020, we saw a huge decline in the GDP percentage change, year-on-year percentage change. It was 17.5%, as you see from the graph. As well, in the second quarter of 2020, we saw a 6% decline in GDP performance year-on-year. This obviously is based on some of the lockdown restrictions that the government had to put in place in order to put into centrality the importance of its citizens' health before the health of the economy. And as a result, we've seen a very huge and dramatic drop in the performance of the country. As part of this, we also saw huge declines in employment. In particular, the formal sector employment changes between April and September of 2020 are a reflection of this huge employment decline. In the QES quarterly employment survey, we saw in the third quarter that there was an over 630,000 decline in the number of jobs in the formal sector that were non-agricultural. From the QLFS survey, which is the quarterly labor force survey that includes agricultural jobs, we saw a 1.2 million decline in the number of jobs, which is a 2.8% rise in the official unemployment rate. The broad unemployment rate signals that the number of unemployed individuals in the country, which includes discouraged workers, has risen to about 41%. Next slide, please. Next slide. We now want to drill down into the South African economy under COVID-19. In particular, we see that there were large declines in real household consumption and investments, which were key drivers to the decline in GDP during 2020, as you can see from the graph. These large declines occurred in the economy that was already struggling before the hit of the pandemic. So we know in general that South Africa has struggled since the global financial crisis to increase GDP, increase employment, and increase investment. And this has led to the government strategically trying to increase investment through investment drives, etc. But in general, we know that GDP per capita as well as real investment has declined since 2015. Also, according to the General Household Survey, which is a survey of service delivery amongst households, we know that social grants remain a vital safety net. So in the scope of household income and household disposable income, grants remain an important component of providing income to households, in particular to households in poorer provinces. Government, as we already know, has provided some sort of COVID grant support, and this has led to an increase of existing social grant system. Has also been extended to the end of April in order to support individuals that are still unemployed because of the pandemic. Next slide, please. So household consumption is an important component of GDP. It accounts for 60% of GDP, so it's important that we highlight trends in household income, consumption, and household indebtedness. 2020 was a very important year because it showed a lot of swings in both household income and consumption. In particular, the end of the third quarter of 2020, we saw household consumption and household income improving significantly, as well as household disposable income reducing quite significantly as well. The impact of the pandemic will continue to have long-lasting effects, and in as much as we strive to return back to pre-pandemic levels, the intention should be to dramatically increase GDP growth and influence aggregate demand through household consumption and household income. In particular, we saw that consumers, households, still are struggling to pay back their debts. The last graph on the slide shows the change in the standing of consumers were still in over 3 months in arrears on their debt has increased in the third quarter from 22.9% to 23.75%. So households are still struggling to pay back their debt and are actually going into more than 3 months in arrears in order to pay back what was essentially a payment holiday during the lockdown because of the high levels of unemployment and the fact that a lot of people were not working in the first levels of lockdown. So in essence, we see that extra fiscal support to households is essentially very important to the well-being of the household, to the well-being of the economy, and to ensure that jobs are still sustained, and if not increased, then investment and growth. Growth is an important key driver to this, and that household support should be one of the central focuses of the totality of elements of economic support that the budget should try and attempt to focus on. Next slide, please. So the growth outlook in general, we have shown that in the medium term, the outlook for the South African economy seems to have improved slightly, notwithstanding the increase in uncertainty that the MTBPS has also highlighted. Later on, my colleague Rashad will go into revenue growth in the third fiscal quarter and give us an overview of how supports this view. In general, we see that it will take more than 4 years for the South African economy to recover to pre-coronavirus levels and further waves. As Dr. Suraj just mentioned, it's possible later in the year, in June, and the may affect growth outlook as well as the efficacy of vaccines, how quickly the rollout happens, and whether it happens to widespread percentage of the population. And this also includes the budget review that we will see tomorrow and the proposals that will affect how much the country will grow this year and with the next term. Thanks. I'll hand over to Rashad, who will go into detail on the fiscal framework.
Thank you. Can I just test if I'm audible, please, Chair? Am I audible?
Yep, you're audible. Continue. Yep, yeah.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Members, the large and unprecedented contraction in the economy was immediately evident in the fall in government revenue. The graph in front of you shows just that. It shows the performance of revenue to date on a quarterly basis with the data available over the current fiscal year. Over the first fiscal quarter, and that's the first blue graph you can, the first blue bar on the graph you can see on the left-hand side of the year, main budget revenue contracted by 25%. So that's quite large, really, really significant contraction over the first quarter compared to the first quarter in the previous year. The fall in revenue was larger than the contraction in nominal GDP, so revenue is moving faster than the overall economy. Nominal GDP contracted by almost 15% over the first quarter compared to the first quarter in the previous year. The large fall in revenue reflects the contraction, the reduction in collection over all the revenue instruments, so that's personal income tax, COVID income tax, and value-added tax. It's important to note in looking at these numbers that this is not merely purely the effect of just the contraction in the economy, but also reflects to some limited extent some of the proposals and policies passed by government, in specific the 2020 draft disaster management tax relief bill, as well as the 2020 draft disaster management tax relief amendment administration bill. And these bills allowed for the deferral of employees' tax, as well as for the deferral of provisional tax liabilities to provide some sort of temporary assistance in the aftermath or in the direct impact of the crisis. Moving on to the second quarter, the overall economy, the overall revenue collected declined compared to the second quarter of the previous year. It was still a relatively large contraction, but smaller than the contraction in the first fiscal quarter. What this reflects, in part, is the opening up of the economy following the hard lockdown in the first fiscal quarter. So that's the lockdown that began in the third week of March last year and the level 5 and level 4. So it shows the impact of some element of opening up. Over the third fiscal quarter, we actually recorded the first increase on an annual basis in overall revenue collected. So that's the third blue graph, 5.6% positive performance. And this reflects a strong rebound in VAT and CIT. However, personal income tax still contracted compared to the previous year. And this is probably going to be a concern going forward, because we saw large, as my colleague mentioned, large losses in formal sector employment during the second and third economic quarter of last year, so that's the first and second fiscal quarters, as well as very low growth and sometimes negative growth in remuneration over the quarter. So PIT is still a concern going forward. Next slide, please. This slide presents in a tabular form what was presented in the previous slide. So it shows revenue trends presented at a quarterly basis as a share, so collection to date as a share of what was estimated in the budget and the revised estimate. What's important to note over here is compared to the budget estimates, the very low collection that was to be anticipated, but compared to the revised estimate, the collection is on par. What this suggests, and this is still a very tentative suggestion because we're only halfway through in terms of through the year in terms of economic data and three quarters in terms of fiscal data, so it suggests tentatively that there won't be that significant risk of further fiscal slippage. So it's not good news, but it's not more bad news. It's still bad news. Next slide, please. What this slide presents is the fiscal position to date of the economy. What we noted is there's a large contraction in the economy over the current fiscal year, and this has significantly worsened South Africa's fiscal position. This is intuitive, it was to be expected, and this was anticipated in both the June Special Appropriations Budget as well as the October MTBPS. This graphically illustrates the quarterly performance of the economy over those specific quarters, and it shows that the significant decline in revenue collection combined with a large nominal GDP contraction saw the main budget deficit reach main budget balance reach a deficit of 15.6% over the first half of the current fiscal year, so that's April to September 2020. And this is quite close to the red dot on the right over there, so the second and the third, the first and the second red dots on the right-hand side of the graph, comparing it to the MTBPS projection. Again, for this to reiterate the point I made in the previous slide, we're relatively close to what was anticipated in the MTBPS, suggesting, again, tentative suggestion that based on the current data available for the third fiscal quarter and having not completed the third economic quarter as yet, we may see the fiscal outcome quite close to what was projected in the MTBPS. Important to note, it's fine, you can keep the current slide, but from the previous slide, it's important to note that given the poor levels of collection as a function of the contraction, debt service costs as a share of overall revenue collected have increased over time. Again, this is intuitive and to be expected, but it's important to keep an eye on that indicator as well amongst others. So now we're going to talk about our performance as in the economy with respect to debt. This particular graph, the slide shows three graphs. On the top left-hand side, you have South Africa's yield curve. So what a yield curve shows is the yield of South African debt along different maturities. So on the vertical axis, you've got percentage, and the lower axis, on the horizontal axis, you've got the number of years to maturity. So if there's a high yield on South African debt, it means the price is relatively low. It means people aren't willing to pay a lot to hold that debt, which means that the investors require a relatively high return given their anticipation or their expectations or their sense of the risk associated with Africa's debt. So if we look at, say, the green line right in the top around the MTBPS time, that's the average from October last year. So if someone wanted to hold African debt, say, at a 20-year maturity, they are getting an 11% return because Africa's debt doesn't command a high price in the market. Now, there's two very interesting points we made from this graph over here. One is if we compare where we are, so the dark, the lighter red line compared to the dark red line, January now compared to January year before, there's elevated risk over the medium and long term based on this graph. So that's the one take home, and this is moderated since the MTDPS, and that's a positive development. The second point to note over here is on the short end of the graph. So if you look at the 1 to 3 year period, that's the bottom left-hand side over here, you see a decrease compared to previously. What this shows is that over the short term, or what this suggests is that over the short term, the borrowing costs, so the short-term borrowing costs of the South African government are likely to have decreased. And what's promising to note over here, although it comes with associated risks, is that the South African government has managed to exploit this opportunity. If we look at debt issuance over short-term debt issuance, it's increased in terms of its total issuance. So the South African government has exploited this. However, this presents other risks going forward, because if instead of getting a 10-year bond, you get a 3-year bond or a 2-year or a 1-year money bill, over the next 1, 2, or 3 years, you have to refinance. So that means roll over the debt. And that presents some element of rollover risk. Nonetheless, it, over the short term, it decreases the counterfactual cost of South Africa's debt service cost. So that's the one point from this particular graph. The second point to note over here is the top right-hand graph. So that shows South Africa's bond auction performance, looking at the 10-year bond since about 13 months ago, just before last year's budget. The green line shows the price initially going up and then moderating. So again, at the beginning of the COVID crisis, there's a lot of uncertainty. People are demanding bond hold at the auction. People are wanting to buy South Africa's bond. Bonds are demanding higher prices. And then there's some element of moderation over the last 2 quarters. However, it's still below previous periods. And this is to be expected given the uncertainty. However, it has a direct impact on South Africa's financing costs. The orange dots over there show some elevated level or some persistent level of demand. So the bid to cover ratio shows, like, you know, how many bids you receive in terms of rand value versus how many the rand value of bonds being auctioned at that point in time. And so it indicates it's relatively well subscribed. So that's good for South Africa. However, this comes at a high cost. 9.5% is quite high compared to other forms of financing, including some of the multilateral loans we have received. On the bottom left-hand corner, this compares South Africa's bond yields against some of our other emerging market peer economies. And it shows that compared to some of our other peers, we are still relatively expensive. And this, again, may only indicate perceptions about risk for South Africa. So I think these are quite important considerations in considering South Africa's fiscal framework. Next slide, please. So this is our concluding slide. It provides the outlook for South Africa's fiscal framework and includes the PBO's most recent projection from this month. The MTBPS and the special appropriations budget last year provided a significant deterioration in the outlook for South Africa's fiscal framework. So that's the red line in the top graph and the red bar in the bottom graph, as well as the yellow line in the top graph and the yellow bar in the bottom graph. So it shows a worsening budget deficit projected compared to the budget review of last year, as well as a worsening debt outlook compared to the budget review of last year. However, based on data available, a relatively buoyant revenue collection compared with what is projected in the MTBPS and the special appropriations budget, we anticipate less worse revenue performance, as well as marginally less worse economic performance over the rest of the current fiscal year. And this suggests that the outcome in terms of the budget deficit and the share of GDP, as well as the debt outlook for the current year, may be slightly better. And slightly better over here is another way of saying less worse. It's not necessarily good news. It just means it won't be as bad as previously anticipated. However, these are tentative figures. And as my colleagues have previously noted, we're not sure about the third wave. We're not sure about the impact of the lockdown that took place, the more severe form of lockdown that took place at the beginning of this year, as well as the impact of the global economy in terms of trade over the current fiscal year and obviously over the medium term. It's also important to note in considering these numbers that South Africa, that the PBO's outlook is non-policy adjusted. What non-policy adjusted means is our outlook is based on the data available and the information available at this point in time. We don't have access to new expenditure proposals that may come about tomorrow, or new revenue proposals that may come about tomorrow. And so this is considering the status quo in terms of these projections. But the short of it is that it's slightly less worse than what was previously anticipated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rashad. Members, I'll just quickly take you through the expenditure and some of the revenue trends. So as at the end of the third quarter, total expenditure by vote amounts to 732 billion, or 71.4% of the total budget of 1,025 billion. And this performance is in line with the expenditure trend reflected in the first 9 months of the previous financial year. And in terms of spending below 60% against the notional benchmark of 75% for the first 9 months, the presidency is under 60%, and just also to note that this budget does not include the infrastructure fund. I couldn't find any reporting, actual reporting on this fund. I think this fund has actually also been transferred to the Development Bank of South Africa. In terms of tourism, trade, industry, and competition, water and sanitation, they were all under 60%. Spending above 80% against the national benchmark of 75% was higher education, training, and small business development. Next slide. So members, in addition to the per vote spending, the performance of specific departments in the front line of addressing the COVID-19 needs shows that government reprioritized funds to the Department of Health amounting to 34 billion specifically for COVID-19 related needs. Indications of possible underspending on consultants and advisory services will then be reprioritized for the procurement of COVID-19 vaccines. The underspending could also be due to the fact that the 1,000 additional community health workers were not appointed as at the end of the third quarter. The funding was still to be approved and made available. The department has not completed the primary health care facility status evaluation to determine the ideal clinic status, which is important for providing services on the primary level of health services. The Department of Social Development, the original budget of 197 billion, was adjusted during the 2020 financial year by 33 billion, which resulted in an adjusted budget of 230.8 billion. And of this amount, 220.6 billion is allocated for social assistance and is transferred to SASSA. A higher than estimated expenditure in social development over the first 9 months of the financial year was mainly due to a higher number of eligible beneficiaries of the 350 Rand special COVID-19 social relief of distress grant. And it's not necessarily due to increased numbers in beneficiaries of the other grants. No reporting on the expenditure or number of beneficiaries is available per social grant on the standard performance management department or SASSA. Last week, the National Treasury provided third quarter results, and in terms of the report back on SASSA, they basically just reported on the operational costs and how they spent the operational funds, but there was no expenditure reflected on that report in terms of the social grants. I also tried to find information on the quarterly performance report of the Department of Social Development in terms of performance, but the performance report actually reflects numbers, the amount that they've transferred to SASSA, but no amounts in terms of specific grants or numbers. The UIF funding allocated for COVID-19 support, according to the State Investigation Unit, a total of 57.3 million was paid out by the UIF, a total of 13,447,006 employees were linked to 1.5 million companies. These numbers could, however, also not verified by the in-year monitoring report, and quarterly performance reports are not available on the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluations database on the UIF. Although they provide for reporting on entities, and no reports was basically on the website to verify these numbers. Next slide. Provincial expenditure, just for the members of the select committee, as at the end of September, total spending on provincial level amounts to 300 billion or 44.9% of the main budget. The slowest spending province was Northwest at 43% and the highest spending province was the Eastern Cape at 47.7%. Next slide. Just in terms of the sectors, the social sector spent 42% in the first 6 months. Education was at 45% and the health sector was on par with the 50% national benchmark for the first 6 months. Next slide. This slide provides a snapshot of local government expenditure and revenue trends. The bar chart shows the changes to the composition of the operating budgets in municipalities between 2015 and 2020. Employee cost and material and bulk purchases has increased over time and constitute more than 60% of the operating expenditure. Expenditure related to contracted services has also been increasing while other expenditure decreases. Challenges that remain in the expenditure of operating budgets are underspending on repairs and maintenance and spending on non-priorities such as excessive sponsorships for music festivals, beauty pageants and sporting events. Excessive catering for meetings and other events, as well as excessive counselor and staff perks. Next slide. Municipalities rely on two main sources of revenue. Own revenue on average amounts to 73% of total real operating revenue and has grown in real terms by 6%. Intergovernmental fiscal transfers contributes on average 27% to total municipal revenue and has grown in real terms by 4.5%. Challenges that remain in the collection of earned revenue are the integrity of the billing information and the accuracy of the billing system. Next slide. Property rates is the main source of operating revenue and government transfers are the third largest source of operating revenue. The last slide shows that government grants and subsidies are the largest source of capital revenue and an insignificant increase in internal generated capital revenue is noted in 2019-20. Thank you, Director.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Honourable members, some of the key messages from our presentation are as follows. We've seen that government has made progress in implementing the social relief package introduced. However, there are still strong signs that much support is still needed for households and small businesses and economy to grow. At this stage, it's quite early stage to measure the success and implementation of the construction recovery plan. There's also some still uncertainty in terms of how the district model is being played out, although there has been some of the pilots are taking place, and I think government is in a process of providing some updates that we got. Looking at the healthcare contingency grants in the previous year, there are signs of underspending in some of the areas which require more oversight in the committees. There's generally positive sentiment around global and domestic economy that you know the outcome is quite positive in early stage. However, the role of the fiscal in stimulating economic growth remains important over the medium term. Next slide. As countries continue to fight the pandemic and some of the related impacts, the public debt is expected to increase over the medium term, and the emphasis is that public debt is issued dedicated to productive expenditure in the economy to stimulate economic growth. Large declines in South African real household consumption is one of the key drivers of the drop in the GDP in South Africa. The outlook for the SA economy seems to have improved marginally compared to how it was in the mid-term budget. It will take some more time in terms of our economy recovering to the pre-COVID-19 levels. As expected, revenue collections has been lower than the prior year compared to the previous year. The first quarter, however, what we've seen is that the 9 months trend shows that there has been better performance compared to what was expected in the price. The supplementary budget and MTP has shown substantial increase in the borrowing requirements for the current fiscal year. Government spending for the 9 months of the fiscal year on average is in line with the prior year spending. Slow spending sectors are those in government. Some of them are actually important in the economy recoveries, and also we see some faster spending both in this regard. Deprecation of spending were made for healthcare and social services indicates that possible underspending are there in some of these areas, and also they are expected higher than expected expenditure in some of the social areas. As expected, 6 months expenditure of provincial spending is slightly lower than the same period as expected compared to the prior years, but healthcare expenditure, as provinces are playing a critical role in dealing with the pandemic, seems healthcare spending is slightly higher than the prior year spending. COVID-19 and related lockdowns affected local governments' performance and with low revenue collections and further slow spending in infrastructure and capacity building. Other members, I think that's where we're going to stop. Thank you so much. Chairperson? Thank you so much.
You are done with presentations?
Yes, Chairperson, we are done with presentations. Thank you so much.
Okay, you are welcome. Okay. Thanks very much, colleagues from the PBO, for the presentation. Honorable members, that's the presentation from PBO. Those who would like to ask questions for clarity or make comments, should indicate on the platform. For now, I have Honorable Ryder. Sister Teboho, are there other members that you can see from your side? From my platform here, I only see Honorable Ryder.
It's still Honorable Ryder for now, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Ryder, over to you. Thanks, Kululek. Welcome, Kululek. I haven't heard from you for a long time.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Chair. Thanks a lot.
All right, Mangwe.
I'm good. How are you, Chair?
I'm fine as well. Today is better. Tomorrow will be a much better day.
How we move forward,
Chair? I can't see anyone, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Ryder, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, nice to see you again as well. And I'm not really surprised that there's not a lot of comments because I really don't think, today's presentation has left me a little bit, it would be speechless, but I've got a lot to say about it. So I've got here in my hand the Constitution. You can't see it because of the way the screen works. There we go. So here's the Constitution. And Section 220 of the Constitution gives the FFC its mandate. And 220 subparagraph 2 says the commission is independent and subject only to the constitution and the law and must be impartial. Well, if today is Dr. Jayanti's first presentation, how impartial he is, we can all be substantially disappointed because it was a very one-sided presentation. It's almost as if we were praise singing what's happened in the last year with very little reflection on some of the negatives that have happened. Some of the way that there's been responses to the negatives, some of which is quite good as well, some of the good news. There's been a very bland commentary on what's happened over the past year. And in fact, we were invited today to a pre-budget discussion. Now, all that we've had is basically a quick summary of some of the points of last year with no issues about, you know, the budget last year. We budgeted for a deficit. There was a budget deficit, and I think, you know, it was just over 8%. No comment about, you know, where we are in actuality now, actual versus budget. No comments about the bond issuance, you know, returns on government bonds, what it's costing us to keep afloat. Very little and very superficial analysis of the current economic state of South Africa. Also no predictions or comments about where we're going with ahead of the budget. Any expectations of what might be seen. You know, again, there was a massive article yesterday about the sugar tax that was reintroduced, and how that's worked and differing opinions. But, you know, that was a new thing we brought in, but there's been no comment from the PBO on that. So really, there's not much to engage with, Chair. And like I say, I'm really not surprised to not see too many hands. A very bland and frankly underwhelming presentation that has given us as members very little to work with. And I guess we'll see you in the lockup session tomorrow with less information, or as the same amount of information we had yesterday to prepare for it. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Raisa, for your comments. Are there other members who would like to make comments?
I don't see any hand, Chairperson, on my side.
Okay. I had a discussion earlier on with Honorable Buthelezi. He was muting at the suggestion that probably it's something that we'll have to discuss as the four chairperson. I think also with the chairperson of chairperson, that instead of receiving a pre-budget analysis, we get a post-budget tabling. That this is what has been tabled by the minister. And what does it mean in real sense? Unlike the format that we are taking right now. So this is a convention that has been there before. It is not for Honorable Buthelezi and myself to change. It needs the collective that we look at rearranging the way that we do things in regard to the support that we get from the PBO. So I will take the matter forward with Honorable Buthelezi and Honorable Mahlangu and Honorable Karib, so that collectively we discuss this matter as chairperson responsible for finance matters in Parliament, and then we have a collective input as to if we have to take it forward with the chairperson or chairpersons, what is it that we are recommending. And economics is a social science. It depends where you stand, unlike natural science. Natural science, 1 + 1 = 1. The sun rises from the east and sets in the west. So sometimes it can be looked from an ideological point of view, And there are many ideologies that contest the economy, economic science, worldwide, in the continent, and here at home. So I think that let's acknowledge the work that has been done by the PBO. PBO is constituted of highly qualified economists, and I have never doubted their credentials in terms of academic qualifications, and also in terms of their deep understanding of how the economics of this world and nationally work. So I think we should commend them for that, because in most cases we complain when we get services from officials who are of low academic qualifications. And if you look even also with the support service that we have as committees, we have got highly qualified staff members. Some have got PhDs, some have got masters, and they put a lot of work before they come to us to make presentations. And hardly, in most cases, they get commended, commended for the work that they are doing. So it should not be that it is the position of the Joint Standing Committee meeting, committee meeting to say that the officials are not up to the task. We should, as much as we criticize, also acknowledge the good work that they are doing. To some of us who are chairpersons, their presentations are quite helpful. Like tomorrow after the budget, we'll be expected to be responding to the media on our view on the budget. And instead of being all over, it becomes important that we are scientific in our approach. And science means something which is evidence-based. If you argue with somebody and you can't produce evidence, surely that's a shallow argument. But I think what the economists have presented here have got lots of science in it. There is evidence. There are statistics that they presented which are credible. I will hand over to the two chairpersons to make comments before we wrap up the meeting. Comrade Digelet.
Yes, Chairperson. I just wanted to check whether you give us time to come in before you wrap up.
Pardon?
I just want to confirm that the chairperson will give us time to respond once before you wrap up the meeting.
Okay. You can respond to what Honorable Riser has raised before I hand over to the two chairpersons.
Okay, no, thank you. Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Honourable Member. I think I will take note of the Honourable Member's points and we'll take them on, with the team. But I think what is important is to understand the purpose of the pre-brief. In the pre-brief, Chairperson and Honourable Member, is this not about, taking your typical normative economic perspective into things, predict things and provide, estimation and try to predict what's happening tomorrow in the market. I think we made it clear it's not about that. I think what we've made it clear is that we appreciate that, members come from long break, from constituent periods, and the intention of the pre-brief, budget brief, is precisely why that status in terms of where economy is, what is about social economy situation, and some of the fiscal context from which which the budget will present. I think that's very important for us, missing that value to members, looking at some of these areas the following day. But that doesn't mean that our proposal is to show. We want you as members to let us know what you want us to tell you, because we're specifically to support you, and what we've been doing in the 2 years as well has been that if members have specific issues that want us to cover, it's helpful to let us know in advance, say, look, can you go, we know you're going to present these are some of the areas that we'd like to cover, or these are some of the areas we'd like to address. Because obviously, at the end of the day, if we're not getting those funds, it doesn't help them, but another provider is making it. But the only point that honorable writers raised, they are actually in the presentation. And then we have in terms of some of the things that you raised, commented about, they're in the presentation, they're in the report that we sent out to the presentation that we cited. It's quite surprising that it's addressed on those points, but they are in the presentation. But I think Chairperson certainly will take guidance of the committee in terms of what some of the areas we need to get. So I think the point of predicting what's going to happen tomorrow is, you know, it's really, if that's what the committee wants us to get, we could try to get that, but I don't think it has value, you know, at this stage, but if the committee wants us to try to predict what's going to happen, probably going to have to really think about what exactly, how to do that. But the point I'm trying to say, Chair, is saying, we're happy to get your guidance, you know, want you to guide us in the committee on how we should get to these things. And I think what we've also been doing is also acknowledging that the post-analysis of the budget of the NGPS, there's often limited time to do the substantive work, which could be also more detailed substantive. Hence, we will invest a lot of time on you know, providing this information earlier before the budget to transfer some of these areas. And of course, you know, the budget is presented on Wednesday, and the following Tuesday, you know, we have to present, and it's quite a good time, you know, to do so much things, and also we've got a very limited capacity. But that does not mean we can't, you know, invest so much time and, you know, in terms of focus areas, you know, it's probably easier to have specific focus areas. But I think, you know, another writer, you know, raised a point of my approach in going forward in front. I think my main, you know, approach and focus it should be about, you know, how members look at the budget effect on society, how the members look at the budget effect on the economy, you know, what changes are brought about in the economy and society by the budget, as opposed to having casting or cost cutting the budget decisions, but look at what are some of the changes that are put about by the budget. And I think, you know, I will try to say to provide information that enable members to think to say, okay, there has been budget put out for the past 3 years in this particular area. Has there been better outcomes? Has there been better equity, fairer, there's been less poverty? I think for me, that's going to be the area that I'm going to focus on. Say, how does the budget change the site? And members are they able to really go back to the constituencies, able to see those changes that are brought about by the budget, either economic development, either changes in reduction in poverty, you know, more service delivery, making economy more inclusive, making economy more less transparent, you know, less more concentrated. So this is a kind of more at a higher level to say, you know, how do members are able to make that determination. You know, our information is brought in a way that this is what's happening in the site. These are the issues that are challenging society, and this has been in place for so long time, and has this changed over time, as it has in the budget. And I think, you know, as I emphasized before, I think that's what, you know, in the context to which we also want to pitch in our work in supporting the committee in this regard. So, you know, in terms of the tax, there has been discussion around, you know, taxes are coming in and on. And we're not going to take the commentary approach where we, you know, predict whether the tax will come and so on. But we'll give information, say, what has been the performance of the revenue in specific areas and some of the challenges that we've got at this moment. But as opposed to predicting, we can do that. But I think it isn't clear how does that add value to the oversight process, in that regard. And I think I'll stop there, Chairperson. Otherwise, Dr. Siraj and Lydia would want to come in as well. Colleagues?
No, thank you. Not me at this time, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll stop there. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Judges. Over to you, Comrade Dikeleti, Comrade Karim. Chairperson, Honorable Matangu, Honorable Karim.
Sir, I'm driving. I can't. Speak.
Chairperson Eunice, I don't have anything to add. Thank you.
Thanks very much, honorable members, PBO team, the two chairpersons, Comrade Karim, Comrade Matangu, members of the select committees, and the standing committees, secretariat of the four committees that are in attendance today. Thanks very much. See you tomorrow. Thank you. The meeting is officially closed.
Thank you, Chair.